Bitcoin jumps by over 5% as CPI inflation misses expectations. Welcome back to the Bitcoin Layer. I'm Nick Bhatia. Today, I have a global macro update after this morning's CPI inflation data. Let's get right into the CPI heat map. This is a visualization of the components of CPI over the last 12 months. What you see on the screen is that numbers in green mean that that data series is showing inflation numbers that are cooling, meaning less price increases. The red numbers on your screen are hotter inflation in that category, so more price increases. And from right to left, we have 12 months ago to the latest release, which happened this morning. So that's why you see on the left-hand side, April 2024. So that's the April data series. Now, looking down the screen on the left-hand side in the April data series, what you see is that the biggest contributor to inflation, which is shelter and housing, has started to cool a little bit. Now, I say only a little bit because 5.5% year-over-year inflation, down from 5.7% last month, which is down from about 8% a year ago. So a year ago, we had an 8% increase year-over-year in housing costs. Now it's about 5.5%. So a cooling of inflation, but as you can see, this is not deflationary yet or even something that the Fed can celebrate. The sticky housing and shelter inflation is something we absolutely have to note. Now, with that being said, because it's such a large contributor to inflation, as housing price increases decline, CPI will also decline. So what we had today is a reading that slightly missed expectations. We have year-over-year CPI up about 3.4%. What are some of the items that are getting more expensive relative to the last 12 months? Well, we see household energy costs up 3.3% year-over-year, 3.8% total for the food and utilities category. We also see a large jump in the price of car insurance. Anecdotally, we're hearing huge price increases in home insurance that must be baked into the housing costs itself. So what we see right now is inflation cooling a little bit, but 3.4% is nothing to scream victory about, especially when we are now over 3 years above the Fed's 2% inflation target. The Bitcoin Layer is very proud to be sponsored by River, a Bitcoin-only exchange and who we believe to be the leader in the business. Go check them out today at river.com/TBL for a special offer of up to $100 of Bitcoin for free when you go sign up. You have a lot of options when it comes to buying Bitcoin. We believe River is your best choice because they do not custody your Bitcoin on a third-party exchange. They have their own solution for storage, and they encourage you to get your coins off the exchange as soon as possible. River.com/TBL for that special offer. In this next chart, we look at the time series of the housing component of inflation. What you see here in black is the CPI reading, the headline reading. So that's that 3.4% number we talked about. In green, you have the housing component. So we saw that at 4.5%. Remember, 5.5% was the shelter component within housing, the overall housing category, up 4.5% year over year. And what I've given you also is the Zillow index. So that's in orange. We see that coming in at about 3.5%. So sticky housing inflation, shelter, rents, all of these metrics are showing us that inflation, yes, it has come down off of extreme levels, right? In the Zillow index specifically, we got to over 15% inflation in the rent index. The CPI housing component got above 7.5%. We see that the headline number also reached 9%. But at 3.5%, it's still not to the point where the Fed can claim victory. Much more on that as we go forth in this video. But this idea that the Fed is somewhat successful on inflation, but not nearly successful enough, is a major theme in the markets right now. Now we'll move CPI here to the green line, this 3.36% inflation. And I'm showing you CPI now versus ISM prices. So as you know, we cover ISM services and manufacturing. Both of these indices are very important to us and a good signal on the economy. They tend to correlate with the stock market as well. So we see that the stock market and the economy are closely related. That's why we watch ISM. We also know that ISM prices, which is a subcomponent of ISM, ISM prices correlates nicely to CPI. Not only does it correlate, it leads. So that is why you see in orange and purple here, the manufacturing and services prices components, subcomponents, you see them rising in 2020 before the green line rises, before CPI, so leading. Then they came down sharply in 2022, preceding the disinflation in CPI. Now, over the last few months, you've seen manufacturing costs go up materially, above 60 on the reading for ISM manufacturing prices, and a tick up in ISM services prices as well. Now, inflation stabilizing around 3.5% or slightly under might be behind the curve here. We saw ISM ticking up over the past few months, so maybe the bump in ISM will be a second half of the year story. That's something that we want to watch very closely. Even though CPI has cooled a little bit here, ISM prices subcomponents support the idea that inflation will tick back up later this year. So we'll keep our eye on it, and we want to watch this ISM series for signal. Now, we will talk a lot more about the Bitcoin price here in today's video, so stay tuned for that. But first, we do have to talk about the rest of the economic releases, and then we will get into the prices and the series of prices. So not just looking at Bitcoin straight away, but looking at the money markets first and seeing how the money markets triggered price action in the rest of the asset classes, including stocks and Bitcoin. Now, in this next chart, I have the retail sales number from this morning. Now, we've talked about the economy slowing. Last week, I gave you guys our first recession watch, that we're coming back onto recession watch here at the Bitcoin layer because of employment data. Employment data is starting to sour. We saw the JOLTS data look poor, meaning that the number of job openings has declined, the number of people quitting their job has declined, and the number of people quitting their job declining is a sign that people are afraid to enter back into the labor force and to go job hunting. So they're holding on to their current jobs. A high quit rate shows us a really healthy labor market. And a bad quit rate, a low quit rate, shows us a labor market where workers are not confident. And that is what we believe is happening right now. Workers that are not confident. It is starting to translate into some of the data. For the first time in a while, we've had a retail sales control group number that really shocked me a little bit. So we have been watching retail sales do very well over the last few years. And instead of showing you the month-over-month change or the year-over-year change in retail sales, I'm just now showing you a seasonally adjusted control group of retail sales here in nominal terms. So this is the total amount, okay, of sales that are going on. And as you can see here, about a decade ago, we saw $250 billion in this metric. During the pandemic, of course, a sharp drop. Then with the stimulus, a huge jump over $300 billion and marching all the way to $400 billion. But what do you see about the rate of change here? It's starting to slow. And so today's was a negative 0.3% month-over-month growth in retail sales control group. So a decline in month-over-month retail sales. And that's why you see a little bit of a drop here in the last portion of this graph. But drops are not uncommon. As you can see, drops happen all the time. It's really the trend. And not only the trend, the slope. So the math here is that rate of change and the slope are the same thing. As the rate of change declines, the slope of the increase of this graph flattens. So that's the tangent, known as the tangent. The tangent and the slope are the same thing. And what we see here is that that tangent is starting to flatten. And if the tangent starts to roll over and decline, it means we're actually trending lower in retail sales. So I don't see any shift in overall decline of the trend, but I do see a material flattening of this trend. Okay, so something we have to watch here, because retail sales directly contributes to GDP, because as you guys remember, your Econ 101, GDP is 70%, 70 to 75% the consumer in the United States. The rest of it is government spending, investment, and exports. And so if the consumer, which is really seen here on this chart, if the consumer is slowing, we are putting the economy in jeopardy, whether the government spends as much money as it can. If the consumer isn't taking some of those government contracts and spending that money into the economy will slow. You will see GDP decline and potentially a recession. So this is another thing to put into our recession watch in addition to the labor market. The consumer, obviously the consumer and the labor market are very tightly related, right? As people lose their jobs or are less confident to go out and look for new jobs, they will tighten their spending. So what we had this morning was a pair of economic releases that supported risk markets because it supported the idea that the Fed would be easing this year. So now we have the economic backdrop. Let's unpack the charts. We will get into price action today. I have candles for you as well, so we won't just be looking at data. We will be looking at price action and look specifically at what happened today and over the last couple weeks since the FOMC meeting on May 1st. TBL audience will know that the Treasury 2-year yield is an expression of the policy rate looking forward over the next 1 to 2 years. Make sure you guys are subscribed at thebitcoinlayer.com/subscribe to our free research publication. We do our best to educate as we go and explain these charts and the meaning of them. Now, the 2-year yield is the expression of the policy rate looking forward in the market. What you can see here in orange is this rounding top line. Now, people that are familiar with our work will know that I drew this line on my screen about 6 months ago, toward the end of last year, as I started to see the Federal Reserve pivot in their language. This is when they stopped talking about needing more and more interest rate hikes and started talking about how this rate hike would be the last and they would be moving to cutting rates sometime soon. And so I drew this orange line as a rounding top. And my thesis here was that over the next several months and throughout 2024, we would see policy rate expectations come down as the Fed starts to get priced in for a cutting cycle to begin. Why did I believe that would happen? Simply the lagged effects of monetary policy. A policy rate going from 0% to 5% in a very short time will have a 1 to 2 year lag on the economy and will slow down activity. You guys know 20% of the economy is housing. Of course, higher mortgage rates will slow housing activity, will slow building activity. We see so many signs of the lagged effects of monetary policy and have for the last several months. I'm not really concerned with the additional fiscal stimulus component of the interest income channel when it comes to the broad effects of lagged monetary policy hikes. Now, my goal of drawing this orange line in the rounding top was not to have an exact level of buying and selling that I would see over the next year. It was more of a shape. I was imagining that you would see some buying and selling in the two-year note as the market tried to get a sense of really whether hikes were in store again or not, if cuts were coming rapidly or not, if inflation was dying or not. All of that would need to be fleshed out with the market. And in reality, we still are fleshing it out. The two-year yield hasn't broken out above 5.25%, nor has it broken down below 4.5%. It stayed very close to the policy rate. But my idea was that it would break down, meaning the yield would break down lower, pricing in rate cuts, and cuts only happen in a recession or a financial crisis. So that was my expectation, and I still maintain that expectation. I still maintain that the lagged effects of monetary policy will dominate the macro landscape. That means higher rates will slow down the housing market. It will slow down the consumer. It will slow down the corporation hiring the next person. That will slow down the consumer because the employment market will not be as strong. All of those things are basic monetary policy 101. It's countercyclical policy. And the reason we have countercyclical policy from the Fed's perspective is to act against inflation when it moves against their policy objective, and to act against unemployment when it moves against their policy objective. So if inflation is too high, they slow the economy down on purpose. And if unemployment is too high, they try to stimulate the economy on purpose. Counter-cyclical. And so thinking from a counter-cyclical perspective from the Fed side of things, we can imagine that they are thinking they will need to cut rates because of the lagged effect of the hikes. And they're trying to hold on as long as they can. Why? Because the economy has not slipped into recession yet. Unemployment hasn't spiked to a concerning amount. The control group of retail sales hasn't collapsed. But those things are on the horizon because we see the employment market getting worse and we see retail sales getting worse. So the Fed is watching these things and thinking we probably will have to cut sometime soon. Now, does the market agree? Let's look at the candles. The candles tell us maybe yes. Okay, it's not definitive yet, but I want to show you now, let's look at the daily candles. These are weekly candles on the two-year yield, just to give you that sense of a huge rise in rates in 2022, an enormous rise in rates. Then a huge consolidation over the last 2 years, really, chopping between 4% and 5%. And it hasn't really gone anywhere. We're at 4.75% today. Now let's look at the two-year candles on a daily basis. Now, I have this orange line here, this rounding top line, and interestingly enough, and it is somewhat of a coincidence, this wasn't a technical level that I was trying to flag. Again, it was the shape and the emotion of the market. And what do you see here? You see this rounding top starting to play out. Rates got above 5%, almost to 5.25% in the end of the year, last year. Then they reached 5% again earlier this year, actually just a couple weeks ago, but rejected materially in a 25 basis point rally, meaning decline in yields off of that 5% level. What does it tell you? Investors are not convinced rates are going to stay up here. It means investors are more and more convinced cuts are coming. So they lock in the yield as they go. They lock in the yield because they fear that tomorrow's yield will be lower. So lock it in today. And they fear that the policy rate will be cut 1% so that buying a 2-year yield at only 0.5% below the policy rate is a good deal. We would think that, okay, we can just buy bills every week and every month at 5.25% and that will out yield 4.75%, but not if the Fed cuts by 1%. That's why we lock in 2-year yields if we think the cutting cycle is coming. Now, I know what you guys are probably thinking. The 2-year yield has been inverted to the policy rate for a long time. But that doesn't mean it's wrong. It just means that it's early. The Fed is not hiking again. Inflation is worrisome, but more important than the Fed's worry about inflation off to the races are two major components. One of them is a slowing economy, which we have talked about, and the other is inflation helping financial repression, which helps debt to GDP come down, which is an overarching policy goal, we believe, that goes beyond just the FOMC committee. And so getting inflation down is not as important as the unemployment rate not spiking or getting inflation to the point where debt to GDP actually might start rising again, which is very, very dangerous for the US government with over $30 trillion in debt on the Treasury side and tens, if not hundreds of trillions in unfunded liabilities. So we'll talk about financial repression at the end of the video, but I want to show you guys here that the rounding top in 2-year yields is likely an expression of Fed cuts coming this year. We told you ECB cuts by March and Fed cuts by June. That was our prediction at the end of last year. We were early, but it does look like the ECB will be cutting rates in June. The Fed might be cutting rates in September. So more on that shortly. More candles for you guys. Let's go to the 10-year yield. A lot of talk about term premium increasing, the amount of Treasury debt so high that we are going to see a steepening of the curve and an inability for investors to digest long-term debt, meaning 10-year, 20-year, and 30-year US Treasuries. What are we seeing? The exact opposite. We're seeing a rally in 10-year yields, a decline in yields below this trend channel, which I'll talk about here in a second. And why are yields going lower? There is a concern about the economy. That is the only reason yields are going lower right now, because every other reason suggests yields should be higher. Sticky inflation and increased issuance over the next couple years due to large fiscal deficits. But instead, a decline in yields off of lower growth expectations. This is very important to watch, especially because of the reasons yields should be going up and the curve should be steepening. It's not, and it's actually fighting to flatten again as the market is telling the Fed, we just don't believe that growth expectations over the longer term are there. We're going to suppress them, and we're going to actually pressure you to cut rates off of future growth expectations. I know it might feel like a lot, especially with all the inflationary dynamics in the economy that we've been talking about, but this is what makes global macro so interesting and so difficult to forecast. Because you have so many moving parts. You have a slowing global economy on one side. You have inflationary dynamics on the other. You have reshoring, which is this whole trade war dynamic that has been with us since 2017 or even earlier, dating before the Trump administration, into the Obama administration, into the Trump administration, and then the Biden administration worsening the trade picture, the trade war, increasing tariffs on electric vehicles, a lot of inflationary dynamics, and then not to mention the financial repression. Still with all that, lower yields, it can be confusing. It can even be to the point where we are frustrated with having to balance all these different components. But that is the nature of the game. And that is why we are here to show you all sides, and why we also thank God that we are not hedge fund managers and fiduciaries, because, man, it is a tough, tough job. So now quickly on the 10-year candles, this is a daily chart. We have had this upward channel in yields all year long. So for 5 months, an upward move of about 3.25% to almost 5% from the lower trend to the higher trend line that I have here. And what do we see today? A material break through the lower bound of this channel, but a bounce off of that 4.25% level, which was that breakout level that we flagged a couple months ago. And so a very interesting move here in treasuries, a suppression again of the yield curve. So the exact opposite of some of the narratives that we've been hearing. We've had investors come on this show talk about a higher treasury supply going forward will put pressure on the yield curve, will put pressure on stocks. Instead, you are seeing a decline in yields and a boost in risk assets as this promise of liquidity starts to come back into the picture. Few more candles before we get back into Bitcoin. We have the dollar here breaking down below its uptrend. Why is the dollar breaking down? It comes back to yields and interest rate differentials. If the US inflation is going to be high for such a long time that the Fed won't cut rates, money will flow out of foreign currencies into the dollar. That will strengthen the dollar. That has been happening. All of a sudden, you get the Fed cuts getting priced back into the market by September. Yields come down, the dollar comes down, financial conditions ease, and risk loves it. Absolutely loves it. The stock market here on this next chart, you have daily candles in the S&P 500. We had a downtrend off of really this breakdown of inflation. Inflation remaining sticky. The market thinking there's no cut coming this year. We're going to sell treasuries. Yields rose. Risk declined. You started to see people just worry about the risk markets. And all of a sudden, the Fed pivots. Once again, Jerome Powell is given several, and I mean several, opportunities to answer the question flat out. Jerome, did you consider raising rates at all? Is it on the table? And he said, no, it is not. We will not raise rates. We are not considering raising rates. He had an opportunity to tighten financial conditions. He did not take it. That confirms, or I shouldn't say confirms, but it supports our thesis that getting inflation back to 2% is not of the utmost importance. It is in third place, where in first and second place are this financial repression concept of higher inflation to reduce debt to GDP and the weakening global economy. Make sure to check out all of our balance sheet analysis at thebitcoinlayer.com/subscribe, as well as our video with Michael Howell last week on global liquidity. The balance sheet is not the topic that we are going to discuss today, but remember in the back of your mind that the Fed announced a slowing of QT, which means getting back to balance sheet expansion eventually is now in the policy crosshairs. Okay, so this liquidity coming back into the market to support money markets, QT, we relate that to the repo market. We relate the repo market to the healthy functioning of financial plumbing. Those things are more important to the Fed than getting back to 2%. If they tell you 2% inflation is their number one policy objective, they are lying to you. Absolutely lying. It's way more important for them to protect the money markets and the repo market via less QT. It's way more important for them to not see unemployment spike to 5 and 6%, causing a huge recession, which will slam tax receipts, and it will cause debt to GDP to spike back to where they're trying to get it away from. So you see how hard the Fed's job is, even if we don't believe what their ordering of their policy motives are. You can still see how difficult their job is. So right now, we see risk off to the races, the stock market touching 52-week highs today. Absolutely incredible rally in stocks off of the double pivot again from Jerome Powell on May 1st. Now, quickly, I want to mention the QRA from the Treasury. We saw that the Treasury said we are going to increase the amount of bills that we issue to account for the volatility in our spending and tax receipts. We are not going to increase coupon issuance, meaning we're not going to increase the amount of 10 to 30 year debt that's going to be issued into the market. The market obviously has taken some bullish signs, and by the market, I mean the Treasury market. Yields have declined, so there was an expectation perhaps that more coupons would come. They didn't. Yields rallied. They went down. Risks supported. So it's not just the Powell pivot by itself. It's potentially also Yellen not hitting the market up for more coupon issuance. So in tandem, we can see easier financial conditions. Michael Howell mentioned duration, the power of duration. It's something that I promise you guys we will unpack more. I teach duration as part of my class at USC Marshall School of Business, where I teach fixed income. Duration is at the beginning, middle, and end of the class. It dominates fixed income portfolio management. But how it applies to global liquidity is something that we are just starting to see with the last several quarterly refunding announcements materially affect Treasury yields and the risk market as off of the back of it. So duration matters a lot. How much duration, which is how much interest rate risk, is placed in the hands of the market matters for how much risk they take elsewhere. So we will get more into duration as we go. We'll do a deep dive on duration, maybe even have Michael Howell back for an episode entirely on the impact of duration on financial markets and liquidity. Let's get into Bitcoin. The next chart here, we see the daily Bitcoin chart, a huge green candle today, and again, a big rally off of the May 1st pivot from Jerome Powell, where he refused to acknowledge more hikes are in the cards, basically allowing for 3% inflation to hang around. So even though they say 2% is their goal, their words and actions aren't meeting eye to eye. And Bitcoin loves it. The stock market loves it. We see the relationship of Bitcoin and the stock market here on this next chart. I have for you the performance, year-over-year performance of these two asset classes. Bitcoin, of course, in orange, up 126% year-over-year. The stock market up 29% year-over-year. And I've cut off the extremes here on the charts to show you a better fit. But you can see that when stocks go up, Bitcoin goes up. When stocks go down, Bitcoin goes down. The relationship is so strong here. We want you to keep that in mind. Financial conditions matter for Bitcoin a lot. Bitcoin's fundamentals, of course, the halving, the ETF approvals, these things matter for the inner dynamics and the liquidity of Bitcoin, the long-term adoption of Bitcoin. But the short-term price action is really governed by macro. Now, a bonus chart in here for you guys. This is the Ethereum Bitcoin cross. It looks horrendous. Ethereum Death Watch has been on all year, and it just gets worse and worse for Ethereum. Remember, this is the price of Ethereum versus Bitcoin. Even though the dollar price might be hanging on or doing okay, the way to judge other cryptocurrencies is by pricing them in Bitcoin. From this, we get a signal of how much money in the space is going to Bitcoin versus other projects. And this daily chart just shows you a dying interest in Ethereum. Okay, some more Bitcoin price action to round out this video before we finish with a little bit more economics. The Bitcoin price up today 5%. We see that the MVRV ratio, which is this relationship between Bitcoin's market price and its realized price, is stabilizing around 2x. This is very, very healthy. I would strongly recommend people go check out our video, What is Bitcoin Realized Price, from earlier this year, where we explain this metric and MVRV and this ratio and what it means to us. We also cover it on a regular basis at thebitcoinlayer.com/subscribe in our free publication. Zooming it a little bit closer here, we see that MVRV is stabilizing above 2 and the realized price of Bitcoin has increased above 29,000, heading above 30,000 here as coins continue to move at higher prices. This is an increase in the Bitcoin cost basis on chain. It's very important to measure where coins are moving relative to the dollar price, not just measuring the Bitcoin price, which can be moving due to purely exchange and derivatives activity. Right now, Bitcoin is largely being dominated by the spot market. This is the evidence that we have here, realized price increasing. It means coins are on the move. So make sure to continue watching MVRV and realized price to give yourself context for this bull market. One last thing about this bull market. We see the orange line, which is the Bitcoin price, pop up above the purple line, which is the realized price, in 2023, early 2023. Then the realized price starts to stabilize, stop going down. Again, remember the tangent. The tangent is no longer negative. It's flat. Then it starts to increase. Then it starts to step up higher, and Bitcoin is now officially in a bull market. Of course, we're about 4x above the lows, so it's obvious to say, yes, a move from 15,000 to 60,000 is a quadrupling of the price and an obvious bull market. But from a historical perspective, Bitcoin's price dipping below its realized price, then back up above as the realized price starts to increase, is a signature Bitcoin bull market. So that's where we are right now. There's been a lot of talk, are we at the end or are we not? The liquidity dynamics support that we are not at the end. The halving, if you go back to the last chart for 1 second, we see that the Bitcoin price doesn't actually start to increase until months after the halving, until the miners have to digest all of the changes to their economics. Then the Bitcoin price can rise. So with these dynamics, we can see a bullish future for Bitcoin, potentially just given where we are with liquidity and the post-halving dynamics. Last couple charts for you. We talked about the ECB. Now we're starting to see the media leaks prepare for an ECB cut in the month of June. This is the green line now. You start to see the green line sloping down quite materially. In light green here, this is pricing in the first little 25 basis point cut. We see the purple line sloping down. That is the Bank of Canada. We also see the black line, Australia. We saw them potentially pricing in another cut a couple weeks ago. That has leveled off a little bit as well. So interest rate cuts, a global wave of interest rate cuts is on the way. First with Switzerland. Then we had one in the Nordic region. Then we are going to have an ECB cut. We will have a Canadian rate cut. The Fed will be cutting rates, guys. I hate to say it, but it's going to happen. The trend is just too clear. We were early on our call with Fed cuts in June, but we feel that the economy is slowing enough. Monetary policy is restrictive enough. On a forward-looking basis, inflation, I know we have covered how sticky inflation is. We've even had guests that are pounding the table on inflation being so high that the Fed just won't be able to cut rates, or that they are stuck or they're trapped. It does appear to us, and it is my opinion here, that they will be in a position to cut rates as long as they are able to signal that yes, 2% inflation is not number one on our list. The very hint of that, you will see cuts fully priced into the market. The very hint that yes, we are starting to get concerned about the labor market without mentioning inflation. Without mentioning inflation in the same sentence, that will be your hint that they've moved that policy objective down from the media's perspective, from the public's perspective. I already know it's not at the top, but they still have the public thinking that it is. When the public finally realizes they're not serious about 2% inflation relative to their other things, then they will finally accept the cutting cycle. Last chart, I promised you financial repression chart. This is the one to keep in the back of your mind. Does the Fed really want 2% inflation, or is it okay with 3 to 4% because it brings down debt to GDP? The Fed might not love this from its policy perspective, but the government does. And is the government telling the Fed what to do? Absolutely, maybe. I will say that. So it is really difficult. I wrote a piece for you guys saying I'm drowning in theories last week. It's because there's so many theories going on. Is the Treasury telling the Fed what to do? Are the Treasury and the Fed meeting every week and coordinating? Is there something going on behind the scenes that is bipartisan and going across administrations on financial repression, as it doesn't seem like either party is serious about the deficit? So we don't know what's happening behind the scenes. All we know is what the market is telling us and what the Fed is doing with its policy rate. So we'll continue to watch inflation. We'll continue to watch Fed pricing. And of course, we will continue to watch the economy to see how the Fed's reaction function is to moves in the economy versus moves in inflation. Thank you for sticking with us once again at the Bitcoin Layer. Don't forget to subscribe to our free research publication at thebitcoinlayer.com/subscribe. Subscribe to this channel, like this video, and we'll catch you guys next time. The Bitcoin Layer is proud to be sponsored by River. River.com/TBL for that special offer. And the reason that we love River at the Bitcoin Layer is that they put your education first. River.com/learn to understand what Bitcoin is, the fundamentals. Also, how to get your Bitcoin off the exchange into your own custody solution. You can use river.com/learn for all of that information. Go check them out today.